This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
What happens if is filmed in front of a live studio audience?
This is What Happens If with Daniel and Jan on Joy.
You're on Joy 94.9, by the way. I'm Jan DiPietro, and this is What Happens If. I've got a good show coming up today. It's going to be really good. I'll talk about that in a second. But I was just sitting here. I was thinking about how we were talking about. Well, I was talking about it. You were listening. I was talking about The Nanny. Remember that show with Fran Drescher, Fran Fine, the character Fran Fine. They do those corny, boring recap episodes. You know, they have like a paper thin storyline in the quote unquote present day, but you know, basically each crap scene is just a segue into a flashback from previous episodes, and then that just ends up being the entire episode. I mean, it's just so lazy. I mean, can't they come up with anything new? How bereft of ideas do you have to be to resort to a crappy, basic, waste of time story like that? I was talking about lazy storytelling. It made me think of social media, which made me think of Instagram influencers, which made me think of that early interview we did with Kurt Coleman. Remember Kurt? One of the things I was thinking about was how we spoke to Natalie Gilholm, who's an expert in the area of Instagram influencers and has managed some of them before. And then we spoke to Kurt Coleman, but we spoke to Kurt Coleman first and then Nat second. And I've always thought that maybe the message would change if we played Natalie's interview, then we played Kurt's interview, you know? Oh, well, you can't change the past, I guess. So we'll just keep plugging along with today's show because, you know, time keeps rolling on here at Joy 94.9.
Hey, this is What Happens If, Joy's new show that attempts to tackle the questions you think you know the answers to. I'm Daniel, and the other voice over there is Jan.
Hello.
Hi. So on tonight's show, we're looking at the weird and wonderful world of social media and asking what happens if I become an influencer. Mm. So we've heard from an actor and a true blue bona fide influencer, although that's not how he refers to himself.
He didn't like that word at all.
He did not like that word. Very interesting. Now, we need to hear from someone who actually plays a hand in hiring these people. Natalie Gilholm is a casting director. That's one of her many jobs, who has had an extensive career both on and off the stage. She is an established performer in her own right, but has spent much of her career representing other artists. She knows firsthand the importance of maintaining a social media presence, and she's on the line to tell us all about it. Nat Gilholm, welcome to What Happens If.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hi.
Hey. What do you want to know?
All right.
The first thing that comes to my head, because you just said you're the out, if in doubt, leave it out. That was one of the mottos we had about when we coached. So when we coach people on kind of social media strategy and kind of if there's any doubt in your mind, if it's going to offend or cause controversy or there you go.
Right.
The little motto, if in doubt, leave it out.
So this is when you were an agent for artists. Is this
management company?
Yeah, I was a manager and it was more so, I don't know, you've talked to an actor, but this was more so in radio and TV personalities.
So, oh, okay.
you know, it actually played a bigger part in their career scope, I guess, if you like, than someone like a music theatre actor.
Right.
And, it is becoming a very, very important part of it's a commodity, and it's a definitely it's a new media stream as important as a TV appearance or a radio interview, and can be as lucrative as sponsorship deals, like the old school ones where you did a TV ad for a Ford, you know.
Yeah, right. I was actually going to ask you about that. Is there much comparison between an ad campaign on your own socials as compared to like a TV commercial?
Yeah, like, I think it's exactly the same.
Is it?
I mean, yeah, a different...
Right. Different pay or...?
Well, I feel like it's... Yeah, different. On a different scope.
Yeah.
A different scale. But it's still you're putting your name and your face and your authenticity to a brand. And that has to be dealt with very carefully.
Right. And it seems to me that, I mean, it's something that I think we know about social media advertising is that it's incredibly targeted, right? So we know that if an ad company has a certain brand that they're working with, you know, and just name your brand, and they can now search for something very specific, like you say, a personality that they think matches up perfectly with their product, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the benefits of this new media, I guess. They're actually, you know, you're not wasting so much money on a TV ad that, you know, kind of hits a whole broad sector of the media community, but instead you can spend a lot less, really target your market and try and kind of weed it into this kind of authentic person that people look up to. I mean, this is what you're aiming for. People look up to as someone that they believe what they're saying all the time. And I think, oh, that person's got that, or they like that particular coffee machine. I've heard it's really good. So-and-so says they love it, you know.
That sounds like me every day.
Well, that's the thing. It's the same as word of mouth. It's really like this new form of word of mouth that people can get paid for. I mean, it certainly has its negatives. But if you're someone that does this a lot, I don't know who your influencer was and why they didn't like the word influencer, but the last thing you want to do is become someone that sells out to brands, and every single post you're doing on Instagram is you know, touting something or trying to hide behind, love this brand of makeup, look how it makes my eyelashes look, hashtag, you know,
hashtag fresh face.
Yeah. I have a question around what's required of, let's call them an influencer. What's required of the influencer? So if a brand or an event is connected with a specific influencer and they're invited to an event, you know, whatever it might be the opening of a musical or something like that or whatever it is, what's the conversation that gets had between the client, the influencer, and the employer? What's asked of them specifically? Are they told exactly what to say, what captions to write?
There's certainly, I mean, it depends, and there's kind of a whole spectrum, I guess, where are you talking about someone that's, say, a micro-influencer, you know, I think what they call people with under 10,000 followers or something.
Okay.
Or up to someone like, you know, someone that hosts a morning show on TV and is immediately recognisable.
Right.
Different spectrum kind of points to how you can engage someone to appear. You can invite them to an opening night. I actually was at the last opening night. I was at someone who I knew from this, you know, this history that I had as a manager, had their tickets. They didn't get opening night party tickets, but they got, you know, a little slip of paper that told them exactly all the correct hashtags, all the correct check-ins.
Right.
You know, making it the easiest version for that influencer to kind of just get online and take a pic in front of the step and repeat and go, best night out, hashtag XYZ show, you know.
Wow.
So that, to me, it kind of like you can't, I don't know, you can't take free tickets to a show and expect that you're not going to be asked to.
To promote.
The idea is that you want to mention it on social. Yeah. Now, that's just kind of different. That's the bottom end of the spectrum, say, for an invite. up to something where someone, you know, a brand approaches you and said, we would like you to be our ambassador for the evening for Mazda or whatever else, and we'll pay you X amount of dollars. Here are the requirements. You'll need to host for 20 minutes. You'll need to post 2 weeks before the event with these particular talking points. Jeez. You'll have to do 3 Instagram stories at the event. You'll need to do photo opportunity with our guests. You know, so, you know, a whole scope of...
Sounds like a script.
Appearance. Hmm?
Well, you have to be quite, as a person, you'd have to be quite pushy in that arena as well to sort of, because I'm yeah. personally quite self-conscious of myself taking a selfie. Like, it's, I find it quite hard to
in,
do.
In a public space.
In public.
Yeah.
But.
Oh my God, I'm terrible.
Yeah.
I would never.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess but they're getting it done, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? It's not uncommon now to walk around and you just see people shooting selfies everywhere. And they've got the full pout going on. They've got the lighting. They know which angle.
I haven't figured out my angle yet.
There's self-timers on the iPhone now. There's different filters. You know, there's so much that can be done. It's essentially you are your own. You know, the other thing with all these, when you go to an influencer as a brand, what you're doing is cutting out all the need for agency creative. In the olden days, you'd engage olden days.
Last Wednesday.
Exactly. 2 years ago. But you would engage, you know, a well-known person that everyone knows their face, and you go, "Great, can you be the face of our next campaign for bonds?" Great.
Yeah.
They would then take that to an advertising agency who designs all the creative. They design the messages, the colours, the look and feel of each photograph, and then they hire photographers and they go into a studio. I mean, all of that still happens, but if you go to someone and say, you know, can you be one of our ambassadors for this particular brand? Here's what we'd like you to do. The creative is then more or less, more often left to the talent.
Yeah, okay.
There's approvals in place usually for the brand, but what they're doing is cutting out entire, like, efforts of advertising agencies, I think, you know, in my... How I tended to kind of see that was that my talent would then have to go away, design the photos, work out what they wear, kind of put the product in with their photos, and they'd send it through back to the brand to get approval, and they'd say, oh, can we, you know... There was a bit of back and forth, if need be, but it's kind of, you know, that talent is then becoming a creative mind as well for that company.
Kind of a self-sufficient way of managing yourself in a way. Is that right?
Yep.
It's like you don't even... Yeah, you kind of...
But you're still always at the mercy of a brand. So that's got to be super careful that you're never putting yourself in a position where you are having to promote something you don't fully believe in. I think that's the main thing you have to be careful of.
Yeah, but it just seems to me that that's so difficult to achieve, right? I feel like I see so much of that. I see so much of someone who, I mean, would they put such and such a fitness clothing brand in their Instagram feed if they weren't getting paid for it? Well, no, they wouldn't, right?
No.
Because they're a personality, because they have the followers, they're using that to make money off it. That just seems obvious.
Yeah. Well, I think all of us could probably think of one person on our socials that we've taken off because they're super annoying.
Yeah.
Because of that fact, right? I'm sure we've all got... at least one friend of ours that's gone.
Yeah.
Because of that. Because if it's not real, if it's not integrated properly and authentically into your life, then it just, I think consumers and friends and followers completely see through it now. We're smart at it now, looking at it going, oh, no, that's just for money. Whereas if it's someone that you've followed for a few years, they've built up your trust, you feel like you've got to know them because you see a little insight into their lives, then you don't mind a little post every now and again going,
sure,
guys,
yeah,
I love this brand. I just had the best afternoon at X. You know, like, you believe them a lot better if you've already built that foundation of being someone that's interesting and real and not someone that's just trying to climb the ladder and gain followers and get invites places.
Well, Natalie Gilholm, I think you've summed it up really well for us. But I'm gonna go now and get my socials happening again because I really think I've fallen behind.
I've probably turned you off.
Yeah, no, you've turned me on. I'm gonna make this happen. no matter what. Thanks, Nat. Okay. Thanks for all your help.
Thanks, Nat.
Keep you posted.
This is What Happens If on Joy 94.9, the show that tackles the questions you think you know the answers to. I'm Daniel.
I'm Jan.
And this week on the show, we're asking, what happens if I become an influencer? Hey, Jan, you know those, you know that blue tick that some people have?
Yeah.
The blue tick on their socials.
Yeah, you explained it to me, yep.
Yeah. So that means that it's like the person's like legit.
Yep.
Like the real deal.
Yep.
Yeah, well, our next guest definitely has one of those ticks.
Yes.
Yeah. With over 33,000 followers on Facebook and up 150,000 followers.
Oof-dee-doof-dee. I actually have 290 on Facebook, 290,000.
What?
Oh.
Okay, well then.
We have undervalued you.
Over 7 years of.
I'm about to pass out. 290,000, wow. Did you say?
Yes.
We're flabbergasted. I'm gobsmacked.
I don't care. Like, I just think that's enough. Like, they're just, like, you know, people go, well, I'm famous because, like, people on, like, on Facebook. But I just don't believe in that, like, mindset, you know?
Well, that's Kurt Coleman, by the way. And even though he does yes. have almost 300,000 followers on Facebook, he doesn't think he's famous. We disagree.
No, I know I'm famous, but I don't think, like, from, like, you know, numbers mean nothing. It's just all about loving everyone, helping everyone in the world. Doesn't matter about numbers in life, you know. People always talk about that, and I'm like, you're shallow.
Not like you're right, babe.
I'm not shallow. I'm the deepest-hearted person in the world. So
I love that.
Yeah.
So you've never been concerned by the numbers, and I guess in a way that must be part of the success. The fact that
don't care.
You're not concerned about it.
Well,
that's really interesting.
I don't because, you know, I'd meet all these people every day, like in real life. Like, I don't even look at it, you know, from an online perspective. I just think I've really, like, changed people's lives because they tell me every day, like, people tell me change their life. They followed me for, like, 6 years and I get that every day. So that's all I care about, actually talking to people. And, you know, that's real life connection with a person that knows me. I don't care about, you know, online. It's just if I can help someone in real life, that's amazing.
We had a little idea, actually, which we forgot to ask you about at the start. We were wondering if you could take a selfie now and post it and see how many likes you've got in the next 10 minutes.
Why?
Would you be keen?
I just don't get, like, why this, it's just so weird.
Well, because we're interested because there's a certain amount of people that are followed on Instagram and you're one of them and we're not.
It's just an app on your phone, babe.
I know, babe, but you're here because of the app on the phone. Do you know what I mean?
I got known before any of this was even like
okay,
a
so
business.
Let's talk about that. So, what I'm interested in is how you know how to use those, you know how to use the socials. Whereas when they came out for me, I didn't really.
It's so weird because do you know how everyone's like, yeah, you have to know how to do all this. There was no secret formula. I'm literally just doing what I want, saying what I want.
Yep.
Just being pretty, I guess. Like I never tried to get known.
Yeah.
All
right.
These people are trying and that's what I mean, this difference with me. Like, I've never tried to, like, stay relevant or known. I'm just being myself and, you know, people just love me.
Yeah,
just
from
being myself.
They absolutely do.
And there's no, I just think it's all like a lie. I've seen people have schools where you go and train to, like, how to market yourself on Instagram. And I'm like, I know that's, like, literally a made-up job to, like, get money because there's no secret. It's literally, it's, you know, you're either just, like, because everyone's, like, constructing their image of themselves and it's something I've really noticed. I don't even, never done that. Like, I'm just being myself and every person is, like, different to how they portray themselves on Instagram. You know what I mean?
I have noticed that
I don't get that.
I have noticed that about what I've seen of you online is that you're quite honest.
Yeah,
and always. I wonder if that actually really sort of shines through and
resonates.
You know, like, that's what I mean. Like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, just talk about, like, fake things because I have so many things that I can talk about like that. Even, like, I just always say that everyone's just, you know, portrays himself as a different person because they think that's, like, I don't know what they think, actually. They must just think that's what is, like, a standard. And that's just being fake, to be honest. Like, be yourself. Who cares?
I do think it's worth acknowledging, though, that there are, I mean, let's say somewhere around 299,950 people who you don't know who follow you, right? You don't know these people. And so whatever it is you're putting out there, right, you can go into your feed and you can see everything you've ever posted. For them, that's all there is.
Yeah. So, and that's what I was saying about the online, because, you know, I've met so many people in real life, and it's different because they actually get to talk to me and they're like, you know, because everything I've shared online is probably like a 2-second video. It's not even who I am, you know? It's just a 2-second thing. You can't portray, I can't portray myself even like online as much as you can, because like I'd be talking for hours, you know?
Yeah.
There's a great video of you learning how to drive.
Yes.
Which I saw.
Oh, you mentioned that. I haven't seen it.
Have you figured it out yet?
It's so funny because
because you just mentioned you moved to Melbourne.
Yeah, but
so I live
in the cities and, you know.
Oh, you don't need to drive?
Uber everywhere. Yeah. So.
I drove here. It was awful.
Did you?
It was awful.
And do you know what's so funny? I don't know, like, I just would rather be in the back seat. I like sitting down and I don't want to think about stupid traffic and like mental drivers.
Yeah. I trains are the best. They're on tracks. You know exactly where you're going.
And people always say to me, they're like, oh, can't you don't get your license? And I'm like, well, I don't have to. It's my life. Why do you care?
Yeah. Well, I don't, I mean, people won't be driving in 10 years. It'll all be robots.
Yes. Literally.
My mum's not going to like that comment.
They already have those cars that are like self-driving and someone crashed.
I know. It's
such amazing technology. Yeah. Well, I'm like, if it's 2018 and you can't even make an iPhone not glitch, how are you going to make a driving car, idiot?
Yeah, it's a giant metal iPhone.
The world doesn't make sense.
Hey, you're on What Happens If on Joy 94.9. We're here talking to Kurt Coleman, social media star, influencer.
I'm just me and no one's me.
Yeah.
Influencer, though.
Well, I hate the name influencer because that's what I was saying. Instagram, Facebook, all of that was never a business when I became known. Even if it's like four years into it, it was never a business. It's just only become like a...
So how did it all start for you?
Just, I literally was just at school.
Like YouTube videos or...
I just think I just posted normal stuff on Facebook like everyone else. And, my thing was just on public, just the setting. And
yeah, right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just people just kept talking about me just randomly all the time. And then I just remember when I was like 15 and I went to school, it was like when I was in the Gold Coast, I went to school, it was like underage. And when I was 13, 14, 15, then when I was 16 and 17 and 18, I got paid to go there. So like, so annoying because I literally like I went to schoolies already, so I was like bored of it, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, right.
I can't believe I went since I was 13.
You're like, this is sad.
But people knew me when I was like 15. They were like, I'm from Toowoomba and like I've heard of you, people at school talk about you and all this. And like I just remember that was one of the first times like someone just from a random place came up to me and just, you know,
that's kind of cool.
They were obsessed with me.
I'm wondering if you, when you were growing up, were obsessed with other people that made YouTube videos or that kind of thing. Cause that was sort of something that I missed.
It's so weird. I've never watched YouTube. I just, I don't care about watching someone else's life.
It gets old quick.
You know what though? Like, honestly, I would rather, why don't you just sit down with someone, talk about their life? That's so much more interesting. You can actually talk to someone. I don't care. I've never watched TV. Haven't watched a television for like 5 years or something. Like,
yeah, right.
I only just, if I go to the movies and stuff, but I don't watch TV. I just think that's brainwashing, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, I just never cared about watching people's lives like that. And why do people look at screens and they're like, yeah, I'm so obsessed with like some random person I've never even talked to. Like, it's a photo. Get over it. Yeah.
That's so interesting because we are talking to like the antithesis of everything that Instagram is about.
It's so funny though because that's what I mean. I don't care about any of that. Like it's not real to me. And all I care about is all my work I've done on camera. That's my passion. You know, I'm not trying to be in a vlog. I'm trying to be in a Hollywood movie, babe. Like, it's a difference. I don't care about this stuff. It's nothing.
Yeah. Do you think it's important to manage it though? Do you think that these days you can
have to because I am this.
No, I mean like just an actual having, like, do you think that you could have what you the opportunities you're getting without
these social media platforms. Definitely now, after all these years, because, you know, I've got mainstream stuff like that, like, you know, I'm in the newspapers and stuff. Like,
yeah,
I could easily do anything if I wanted to without anything. I just know that I'm confident in myself and...
Yeah, it's a good
attitude. And I've never really tried just being myself. That's why I'm like, what do you mean?
I saw some really good, some really funny videos of you recently at it looked like an opening at the NGV. National Gallery of Victoria.
Yeah, so much fun yesterday.
Yeah, it was, because those kind of events are usually, they can be a little bit stuffy. You know, an opening night at a gallery, but you kind of definitely brought your own flair to it.
Well, it was a wine tasting first,
Oh, great. So then,
Then we went into the gallery. And, but everyone was drinking wine, like everyone had wine in the gallery. Yeah. So they were pouring everyone wine, saying, taste this, taste this. And it was amazing. Drank wine that has no yeast made in it.
Oh, cute.
Oh, that's
good. So vegan.
Well, it's just like, they just say it's better as for y'all because it's like natural off the rocks. They said it actually is. It's like
wine out of rocks.
A magic stone rocks in New Zealand, and apparently the yeast just comes naturally from the rocks, and it takes longer, but it's fresher wine.
Oh my god, I love
that! Wow. Did you go because someone asked you to?
One of my friends wanted me to go with them, so I was just like, yeah, I'll come with you.
Do you get invited to a lot of different things?
Yeah, all the time, especially down here. Like, you know, sometimes I'm like, there's three things on in one day, can't go to them. But, no, I love it. I just love, like, you know, there's so many fun events, and especially a lot of my friends run events, and I love supporting them being there because it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, Kurt Coleman, thanks so much for coming in, being on our first episode of What's What Happens If.
I love it because What Happens If?
Exactly. Yeah. Who bloody knows?
I think we've learned about that because I completely, this is not what I expected to hear.
That's great. What I mean.
This is what we're about.
Yeah, I love it.
Love Wonderful. That.
Yeah.
I love me.
And I love you.
I love you.
I miss you.
And I miss you.
This is What Happens If on Joy.
This is Joy 94.9 and, so it's Tuesday, and sorry, we haven't really gotten anywhere in the show yet, have we? But, I was just talking before about, how old sitcoms used to do those crap recap episodes where they have, you know, they've got no good ideas. So they just want to like save some money and just fill up the slot, you know? But, we'll keep trucking on with this episode today, in the here and now, because that's all there is in life, isn't there? I mean, I remember when I spoke with Linda Barclay. Do you remember when I spoke to Linda Barclay? Of course you do, because she had interesting, insightful, important points to make on critically important issues that we face as human beings. I really liked when we spoke about the value of moments in our lives, of time itself. And, like I said before, you can't change the past. So, we're here doing today's episode, which I'm going to get on with now. And, that's all there is. This is Joy 94.9. And this is Dr. Linda Barclay. Thank you so much for joining us on the line, Dr. Linda. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. And how are you?
I'm good. So I decided to do a bit more of a follow-up on the carer thing into dementia. And I've mentioned this before, but for folks who have just tuned in, I have a grandmother who has severe dementia. And it's gotten me thinking a lot about how we can go about attempting to understand someone's wishes when they are no longer sound of mind, and that's the sort of the terminology that they use. And you've written a lot about dignity and disability, and I'm wondering how you think about the relationship between dignity and disability, first of all, and how that might apply into the life of a carer who's attempting to develop a full-rounded view of what that person who is not sound of mind may want in their life in an ongoing way.
The kind of ethical issues raised by dementia have in fact been discussed by philosophers for the last 20 years or so because they raise really tricky issues about who we take a person with dementia to be. So do we, when we're caring for someone with really advanced dementia, are we trying our best to keep them happy and content and avoid distress? Or are we trying to honour the person that they always took themselves to be before they got dementia?
I wonder, it's something that I've been thinking about a lot in my life, which is this idea that when someone's got dementia, there's obviously the memory, the memory loss, or the memory skewing, or the thinking that someone is somebody else. So there's just this sort of confusion and misappropriation going on. And sometimes, if my grandmother is visited, she perhaps doesn't remember it half an hour later, but will remember it, let's say, 10 days later, whatever it might be. I'm sure it's different for every patient. And I wonder how you think about the idea of how the person with dementia is living moment to moment. And is there it feels like there's an inequality in how we value moments for people with disabilities. Is that ringing true in any way? Am I off the mark there?
So whether we think some moments are more valuable than others in their lives?
Yeah, whether the meaning of moments changes intrinsically, the value of those moments changes intrinsically because they are forgotten shortly after.
Yeah, no, look, I think that's a really good question. And both because they're forgotten shortly after, so it doesn't mean as much if it's just so transitory, but also because so much of our lives and the value of the moments in our lives contributes towards some kind of forward-looking project, right? So we...
A self-made narrative.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So human beings are not actually particularly good, despite all the ways in which self-help books tell us to be better at it. We're not actually particularly good at just simply enjoying the moment, right? The moment's always part of some bigger project or it's part of some bigger narrative or it's part of some, series of interconnected relationships or something. It's always plotted somewhere on a bigger picture. And I think that sometimes for people with very advanced dementia, it is just about trying to make the little moments count. But how do we do that, those of us who don't have dementia, do that without, again, feeling this kind of sense of loss that, well, that's all it is. It's just a little moment.
Right? Yeah.
It's not actually helping to improve the overall quality of this person's life necessarily, or it's not actually helping to, on some path of progress in some way. It's just a moment and it'll be gone.
That's almost more difficult to take when you are sound of mind.
It's
a hard reality to face.
It's very hard for those of us without dementia to step into the shoes of somebody who does have dementia. It's just very, very difficult because it's not just the cognitive impairments. It can be such a way of living that's so at odds with what it means for most of us to be human beings, which is that we construct our lives in these longer narratives with complex connections to other people, with complex understandings of who's alive, who's dead, who's present, who's not. And when you take all of that away, it becomes very complex for us who don't have dementia to know what the right thing to do is for someone who does. So another really good example is just the ethics of deception.
Right.
So usually we take honesty to be extremely important in our interpersonal relationships. But what if a loved one with dementia keeps asking about her partner, for example, who died 10 years ago, and she just keeps forgetting that her partner died. And so she keeps asking again and again, where's so-and-so, where's so-and-so? And again, family members or loved ones have really, really different views. Some are just kind of really stuck on this idea that you have to be honest. And so you have to keep telling your loved one with dementia over and over again that their partner actually died, right? Mm. Whereas other people say that's cruel, right? What you can do is just say, oh, you know, they're down at the supermarket, and then you hope that they'll quickly forget, which they often do, right? Mm. So, and then 10 minutes later they might ask again, and again you say they're down at the supermarket. Mm. The question is, because so again you're thinking, well, the most important thing is not to distress them, right? And that means we have to suspend some of these normal, you know, standard ethical relationships like honesty. And people have, some people have a very hard time doing that, and we don't agree about whether that's always the right thing to do.
You are listening to What Happens If on Joy 94.9. I'm still speaking with Dr. Linda Barclay from the Philosophy Department at Monash University. Now, Dr. Linda, we left off there, and I wanted to move on now to something that I found interesting when I was sitting watching the Four Corners double super duper special on aged care. And I was sitting there with my grandfather watching it, which was interesting in and of itself. But I found it interesting that I kept hearing this word justice come up, especially from the carers or the sons or daughters of those who were receiving care and were abused, allegedly, or et cetera, et cetera. This word justice kept coming up, and I wonder where justice fits into this idea of representing someone who is cognitively impaired.
So I think that I think we're probably just scratching the surface of the amount of abuse that's going on in places like nursing homes. And, you know, one really simple way to look at it is to say, well, things are so bad because it's just a kind of economic injustice. There's not enough money spent on high-quality nursing homes. There's not enough money spent on regulation. There's not enough money spent on high-quality staff. Yeah. And that, of course, is all partly true, but I doubt that that's the whole story about justice. I think one of the reasons there's not enough money spent and why in any case there would be abuse even if there was enough money spent is because there is so much stigma attached to being old and very frail and certainly having cognitive impairment. So, and having all three of those traits is a triple whammy in terms of stigma. I mean, we talk that way ourselves, right? We ourselves say we couldn't think of anything worse than losing our marbles.
Kill me before that happens, you hear people say.
We talk in this stigmatized way ourselves old age and dementia and frailty.
Never thought of it that way. It really is negative talk, isn't it?
It's totally negative talk. And if you think about comparing that to other ways in which people are stigmatized, it would raise eyebrows.
Absolutely.
But having said that, you know, there's no point sticking your head in the sand. It can, in fact, just be very, very difficult to have some disabilities. It can be a genuine loss, both for the person themselves and others around them, to become cognitively impaired. So I don't want to deny that. But to talk about it and to treat it as a fate worse than death is also our way of giving voice to our cultural obsession and valuing of youth and physical robustness and beauty and all of the things associated with that. So I think justice for people who are going to be very old and frail and end up in some form or another of care ultimately will never really be perfect until we learn to stop talking so negatively about old age and the declines that are often associated with it. You know, they say in some countries and in some cultures, old people are lauded and put up on a pedestal. I don't really know if that's true or in what exact sense it's true.
Right.
But I do think we need to stop trash talking it as a fate worse worse than death.
I don't think it would be a stretch to say, and I'm in the same boat as you, I couldn't, you know, confirm it either way, but it wouldn't feel like a stretch for me to say that the word elder has a very different meaning in some cultures than it does others. And I'll stick my neck out and say that our connotation around elder ain't that great.
No, it's not. We have the word elderly. So I used to work for older people in a pension non-government organisation, and they would never use the word elderly. They just referred to themselves as older people because the word elderly for us is a kind of, it refers to a various character traits of being frail and incompetent.
Yep. Dotty.
And it's not even a word, having been in that environment in the past, that I would even use. I would say older people.
That's interesting.
Yeah, whenever you see abuse, nearly in every case where you see people subject to violence or abuse, there's nearly always some kind of stigma that lies behind it that makes it so easy for otherwise good and decent people to become abusive.
That's very interesting. Well, Dr. Linda, as you said just before, I think we've only scratched the surface, and it's been a fantastic conversation with you. I appreciate you having this dialogue with me and coming on speaking about something that's very close to my family and that's been swirling around in my brain. Can you just maybe let us know where people can go to find your work?
Sure. So I have a website, and if you just Google Linda Barclay at Monash, it will direct you to my website with all of my contact details.
Wonderful. Dr. Linda Barclay from the Philosophy Department at Monash University. Thank you so much again, and I'll speak to you next time.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. And, yeah, you know, here we are. It's today, Tuesday, and I'm experiencing this moment with you, the listeners. But really, I'm just in a room on my own. But, you know, the point that I continue to think about since speaking with Linda Barclay is that there's nothing that tells me that my experience of life is of any greater value than anybody else's, right? I mean, regardless of disability or cognitive impairment. I mean, have a think about whether or not you know that what you're experiencing is good or bad. How do you know that it's good? How do you know that you are indifferent or otherwise? Yeah, gee, I tell you what, it's a real roller coaster, radio. You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, a lot of radio is music. A lot of stations play a lot of music. But, you know, Dan and I always felt, and I still do, that music doesn't really have a place on What Happens If. You know, we designed this show for conversation. But we did, you know, we like to finish the show off with songs that are, or that were appropriate to each episode's theme, as it were. And I mean, I won't play old songs we've used before now. I mean, talk about lazy. You know, we've got a show to get through here on Joy 94.9. I'm not going to play old songs. I wouldn't do that to you. You're the reason why I'm still in this room, alone, just talking, learning, speaking to people with strong insight, or just people, dialogue, conversation. Well, that was sort of fun, right? It was a parody, I guess, of a flashback episode that perhaps you may know of if you watched 90s sitcoms. And if you didn't watch 90s sitcoms, you'll have no clue what just happened. If you'd listened from any point in today's episode other than the beginning and followed all the way through, you will be just utterly confused. And that's okay because there is a podcast, so it's all recorded. everything that Dan and I have done here at What Happens If across the last few months is just out in the cyber ether forever. Save some crash, some kind of apocalypse where it's all lost. What would we have to do for that to happen? I'm going to take this opportunity, now that we're out of weird Twilight Zone flashback world, to thank Joy 94.9 for having us here. Daniel learned the radio craft here in the learning programs that are open, it would seem, to anyone to come in and practice. There's a kind of creative freedom in the learning process, and it seems to me that the people here at Joy 94.9 who have been here a long time, who are champions of teaching new people, younger people, older people, anyone really, the craft of radio, of podcasting, are a group of people who should be admired. It's a real treat to have been in the studios here and to be a part of this community and to share with you some of the things that I want to know about and that Daniel want to know about. To have also given Daniel and I, two old friends, an opportunity to spend some time together. And that's what we did. And I've enjoyed continuing it on after that. I hope that you out there have enjoyed it. There's not a lot else to say at this point. Yes, I won't bore you with replaying songs from old episodes. I'll leave you with one that I think, just based on where my brain first went in its method of free association, seems to sum up the end of this little part of life. So this has been What Happens If.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.